Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
What's going to happen? You meet Joe Frazier again. Here's how the fight's going to sound on the radio for those of you who can't afford to buy the expensive theater seats. And the fight goes like this. Ding! Ali comes out to meet Frazier, but Frazier starts to retreat. If Frazier goes back an inch farther, he'll wind up in a ringside seat. Ali swings with the left. Ali swings with the right. Look at the kid carry the fight. Frazier keeps backing, but there's not enough room. It's a matter of time. There Ali lowers the boom. Now Ali lands with the right. What a beautiful swing, and the punch lifts Frazier clean out of the ring. Frazier's still rising, but the referee wears a frown, for he can't start counting till Frazier comes down. Now Frazier disappears from view. The crowd is getting frantic, but our radar station staff picked him up. He's somewhere over the Atlantic. Who would have thought when they came to the fight that they would have witnessed the launching of a colored satellite?
Welcome back. Hour number two, Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. It's game night, game four, as the Sharks try to even things up on home ice tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Our coverage begins right after this show ends at 7, face-off a little bit after 8. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, David Trentadue is helping us out on this special day. The spaceman, Bill Lee, is with us in studio as well. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show one of the foremost boxing experts in this country, Mr. and a good friend of this show, Russ Amber. How you doing?
I'm good, Mitch. How are you, sir?
I am fine. I think we're all feeling... Well, I'm not going to speak for you. You go ahead and tell me what you're feeling right now.
When it happened on Friday and Saturday, you know, the news started breaking with everybody, I sort of found myself feeling very mortal and very vulnerable. And maybe you can add a little old into that because... You know, one of the reasons I got into boxing was because of Muhammad Ali. You know, I was 10 years old, and all our friends were, you know, debating of who was going to win the fight between him and Frazier. And, you know, Ali was a hero. You know, he was a 29-year-old, brash, you know, extrovert who had, the world had never seen anything like him before. And, you know, that was a hero at the time. And you're a baby. I'm 10 years old, and... You know, now the king is no longer, and I'm not 10 years old anymore. And if it could happen to Ali, it's going to happen to all of us. And I certainly felt a little more vulnerable and much more mortal than I've ever felt.
Well, and you've just got me by a couple of years. We got Bill Lee here, who's pushing 70, who's still active. He looks, every time I meet someone who runs into Bill, whether it's around the station or out in public, they cannot believe that you're pushing 70. So in to what Russ is saying, does that affect you at all?
I did. On my morning show in Boston, I said the same thing, and it was exactly your words about there is an expiration date on the bottom of your foot, and I'm 4 years younger than Ali, and I saw that he was born in 42 and I in 46. But it made me not afraid of death. It made me not, you know, really go out and stock it, but it's little big man said it. And I think when he's talked to Chief Dan George and Dustin Hoffman, it's a good day to die, grandfather, you know. And when he died, you know, he relaxed. And I know that his face turned into the baby that he was. And that made me feel good.
Russ, because he's been so ill for so long, you know, there's a whole generation, and maybe they understand now, maybe they gave it a passing glance in why guys like you and me and women like you and me just loved the man so much. Maybe they're beginning to find out because they missed everything. I mean, you can go on YouTube and watch highlights of a fight and all that, but they missed that time and that period and what made him stand out.
Well, yeah, and I'll give you a very clear look at that right now. And only people, and I don't know if Bill has had a chance to or not, but, and I don't know if you did or not, Mitch, but having met Ali was an experience unlike any other that I've had with any human on earth. And I'm lucky to say that I've been around a lot of sporting celebrities and whatnot. You know, I've been fortunate in that way. But only people who have met Ali have been able to say, oh, Russ, I felt exactly the same way, but I didn't want to tell anybody because I thought it was strange for me, but I know exactly what you're saying. When I was in his presence, Mitch, and again, I'm saying this, I'm not trying to be blasphemous when I say this, but it was like being in the presence of a superior being. It was almost like being an aura, a godlike aura around Ali. And a perfect example of that was 1990, we were in North Carolina doing a fight between Razor Ruddock and Bone Crusher Smith. And we're in the lobby of the hotel, and there was a small hotel, and there was just a few of us there, including a couple of girls working at the front desk. And Ali walked in with his daughter. And within minutes, as if on a set of a movie, extras started piling in from doors that I didn't even know existed. And within minutes, the lobby was filled with people who just wanted to touch Ali. And this one lady came out. She must have worked in the kitchen or something because she was dressed in all white. And she came out and she reached her hand in between a row of people that were surrounding Ali. And she just reached out and wanted to touch his skin, wanted to touch his hand. And she did, and then walked away. He never saw who she was, but she touched Ali. And when I told people this feeling, people who have met Ali knew exactly what I meant when I said that. It was a feeling, Mitch, I've never had before in my life with any other human.
Well, it's interesting because in the last half hour when Bill joined us in studio, he told us of a time he shared a stage at Harvard with Muhammad Ali and Marvin Hagler. And you kind of said the same. I asked Bill if he had this special presence about him, and
yeah,
he used the word aura.
Or he had a Carolyn shield that he just radiated. And like, you're exactly right. It was being in the presence of a superior. He was so natural, and he just was just a lovable guy. I just, everything about him. My father, I cannot believe my father despised him so much, and I loved him so much. It was amazing, but that's what happens when you're a Republican.
Well, he was the crossover guy, though, wasn't he? Like, yes. From the 3 years that he went from being, when he got his license taken away, he was arguably among the top 10 most hated people in America. I mean, if you look at the old black and white footage of the white people who judged him at that time, all the authorities, the boxing commission, the draft, the army people, everybody, were all white, everybody. And he faced all of them and became arguably like top 10 most hated people, despised people in America, to coming back 3 years later, 3.5 years later, when they gave him back his license, as almost a hero to a generation of people who had then started to believe in what he said, I'm not going to war. I'm not going to fight and go against my conviction. And the one thing that I'm sad to have not heard anywhere, I'm the only one that I've seen on what, and I'm not a maniac on social media, but I'm the only one to have posted the quote in which, to me, defines what Muhammad Ali was. And he said, even if I have to face machine gun fire on that day, I will face it. before denouncing Elijah Muhammad and the religion of Islam. I'm ready to die. Now, well, think about that statement, you know, and this Facebook generation doesn't understand that, but that statement and that conviction that he had of himself is what made him great. That's what made him great, because he believed in something. Nobody had to agree with it, but he believed in it so much and stood by it his entire life. That's what defined Muhammad Ali.
I'm saying, you're talking about me, about some draft, and all of you white boys are breaking your neck to get to Switzerland and Canada and London. I'm not going to help nobody get something my Negroes don't have. If I'm going to die, I'll die now, right here fighting you. If I'm going to die, you my enemy. My enemy is the white people, not Viet Cong or Chinese or Japanese. You my opposer when I want freedom. You my opposer when I want justice. You my opposer when I want equality. You won't even stand up for me in America for my religious beliefs, and you want me to go somewhere and fight, but you won't even stand up for me here at home.
How about that? That's kind of debating a white student who obviously didn't like Ali's stance on Vietnam. And listening to those words, you can't help but think of Trump right now, right?
Well, no, he's the opposite of Trump. You know, the fact that I'm not going to go 10,000 miles and, you know, and fight people of my own color when I can't get a sandwich right here in Louisville.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the bottom line. He was a prophet in his own time. And when they roll back the rock, he's going to rise. And I'm telling you something, he could be the demise of Donald Trump.
Well, actually, you know, when Trump came up with this policy of banning Muslims, and then Obama started to, you know, in a follow-up speech, started to list some well-known Muslims in America, including sporting heroes. Trump questioned, who are these sporting heroes, and wondering if Obama was profiling. And then there was Donald Trump rejoicing in the life of Muhammad Ali yesterday, as if he had never tweeted what he had tweeted originally about Muslims, and said what
guys,
he had said.
With all due respect, I don't think it's a time to include Donald Trump when we're praising somebody as great and as amazing as Muhammad Ali.
You're right. He shouldn't even be in the same room.
So yeah. Let me ask you from a boxing standpoint, okay? This is where, for a lot of us, it gets really interesting. I didn't see Ali fight before he lost those 3.5 years. You know, I've seen films since, but, you know, as I grew up, the first fight I can remember is Foreman in 71. Knowing all about him, my dad was a big fan, but I don't remember him as a fighter. You did the show on this where you showed the great fights of all time on TSN. You probably have the best library in Canada, Russ. Before he was stripped of the title in 1967, where would you have ranked Ali?
Well, you have to, in my opinion, the two greatest heavyweights that ever lived. And if you ask my father, he'll tell you Joe Louis, and maybe Bill's father will tell you the same. And our generation was Muhammad Ali. And both those people, it's incredible how both of them transcended their sport and had such a social and political impact on the world, and they were the two greatest heavyweights that ever lived. So from a perspective of that, of who was the greatest, when were they at their greatest, if we were to use the two greatest heavyweights, which I still contend are Muhammad Ali and Joe Louis, June 22nd, 1938, and again, this generation doesn't understand the weight of the world that Joe Louis had on his shoulders the night he fought Max Schmeling in the rematch, literally less than a year before the official start of World War II, and, you know, Schmeling being used as a leader for the Nazi race, although he was not a Nazi himself, but the propaganda machine was in full swing. And Louis, a black American, who, you know, was still had to be, you know, had to watch his P's and Q's. He couldn't do what he wanted to do, was the symbol for freedom in America. And the weight of that of the world was on his shoulders as he takes on Max Schmeling and puts on one of the greatest performances in boxing history and destroys Schmeling in one round. And I contend on that night, there isn't a human that lived or will live that could have beaten Joe Louis on that night. That was his night. And that same night, to me, the night that was the quintessential Muhammad Ali, the night in which he was invincible on that night, was to me the night he at the Houston Astrodome when he fought Cleveland Big Cat Williams. And that was the quintessential perfect Ali. Everything about everything he had said about floating like a butterfly, stinging like a bee. He threw flurry of punches. He threw body punches. He shuffled. He showed power. Everything he had in his arsenal came out on that night. And that, to me, was the greatest night in the quintessential Muhammad Ali.
So at his peak in 1966. And then when he came back, obviously, what did he lose?
Oh, well, it wasn't the same guy, right? That much like Joe Louis, once when he went into the Army, when he came back, he wasn't the same fighter when he came back after doing the Army stint. You know, he was a shadow of himself. Now, Ali, as great as he was, the footage in and of itself speaks for itself. Watching him in 71 against Frazier, you know, he hadn't been hit he got hit more in those 15 rounds with Frazier than he had been hit in his entire pro career before that. You know, like that's how much different it was. He was unable to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee anymore. He didn't have that fluidity. He couldn't dance for the 15 rounds the way he did before. I mean, there was a marked difference. They took a toll. And just how, as great as he was, he was still able to reinvent himself and find ways to win, but it certainly wasn't the same as the Ali that beat Cleveland Williams and Sonny Liston and Zora Foley and all those guys, when he became champion of the world for the first time.
And when you think about it, Russ, and we know what happened to him eventually, the amount of fights, I know Joe Louis was famous back in the day for the bum of the month club, right? He took on everybody every month, but the fights lasted one or two rounds. But the amount of fights and rounds that Ali accumulated in the mid to late 70s was obviously dangerous.
No doubt. But I think more of them were probably later as well. You know, like after, I mean, everyone is right, and I hate to agree with Ferdy Pacheco, but, you know, after Manila, you know, that should have been Ali's swan song, because both of them, both Frazier and Ali, never recovered from that, unfortunately. But it's difficult. When you're a warrior, it's difficult to go out. But I think signs will be starting to show. But again, even with that, that showed just how great he was, because he was even still able to win and be champion of the world at a tenth of what he was. That's how great he was.
Russ Amber, we were lucky, huh? We were lucky to see this man.
Yeah, not many will see. We won't see this again. And again, I'll be very careful and tell the people how important it is when you have a hero. That hero must transcend his sport, or must transcend whatever field he's in, to go bigger than that. And the two greatest that we've had has been Joe Louis and Muhammad Ali, and neither are with us any longer. And I hope history remembers, you know, what Ali did and the stands that he took and how he went to bat for people long before they ever went to bat for him. And he took a position in a time when people today just don't understand. So when you pick a hero, make sure you pick the right one, because it has to be somebody who's ready to live by that conviction.
Russ, always a treat. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you, Bill.
You bet. Loved it.
As a Muslim minister, my own outlook on war and violence is well known by now. And I would like to say that the number one greeting in my faith is peace, and that is As-salamu alaykum, which means may peace be unto you. There have been many questions put to me why I refuse to be inducted into the United States Army. Especially, as some have pointed out, many have pointed out, when not taking the step, I will lose so much. And I would like to say to those of the press and those of the people who think that I lost so much by not taking the step, I would like to say that I did not lose a thing up until this very moment. I haven't lost one thing. I have gained a lot. Number one, I have gained a peace of mind. I have gained a peace of heart. I now know that I'm in content with Almighty God Himself, whose proper name is Allah. I have also gained the respect of everyone here today.
One of the things that Muhammad Ali had to do when he was stripped of his title, he had no earning power. He visited college campuses during the Vietnam War, and that was one of the speeches he gave. And it's interesting, he's more kind of stilted, right, reading a speech as opposed to just off the cuff. But that was the message that he was delivering to campuses that would have him during those three
Which
and a half years.
A lot. You're right. I know I did not remember those years. They must have gone by really fast. And the 70s, if you remember the 70s, you weren't there. Because it was
a
blur.
Well, you were a little busy.
Oh, I was busy. You're exactly right. But, you know, I let my hair grow long. You know, I wanted to change my name. You know, he was right. The war was wrong. And everybody eventually, now he's a prophet, because a prophet in his own time is not well respected. You know, it took 200 years before Jesus, all of a sudden now he's, you know, the Catholics and everything, and the Protestants start off. They're all there. But Muhammad Ali is a prophet, and he's right up there. And, you know, the key is, I do not believe in Allah. I do not believe in, you know, I mean, Jesus Christ was a prophet. Allah was a prophet. They are all descendants of Abraham. You know, and I believe Abraham is the reason why we have descent on this planet, because of all these religions are in conflict. More people have died in religious wars than any other war known to man. And thereby, I believe that I believe in no boundaries. You know, I believe in a kumbaya moment. And he did change his name, but he was on the right side of history. That's what we'll have to say.
God said to Abraham, kill me a son. Abe said, man, you must be putting me on.
Exactly. And he begot Sarah, and then only after he begot the girl that gave him Ishmael, which gave him the Muhammad religion, supposedly. So, you know, I wasn't there, you know, I wasn't there. And it's like Mel Brooks said, I give you these 10 commandments.
When we come back, very special guest will join us in his old-time slot, Mr. Stephen Brunt, on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.